Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Tmura Daf Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. At the beginning of Maseches Temura, let us just say a word about what Temura is. Temura is an effort on the part of someone who had set aside an animal to serve as a sacrifice, labeled the animal as a particular sacrifice, and then brings another animal, a mundane, a chulin animal, and replicates the sanctity that is on the korban, on the sacrifice that he set aside, onto this second animal. Temura is not to be understood as a form of redemption or removal of Kedusha, but rather, as we said, a replication of the Kedusha that is on a given animal. The Mishnah. Hakol Memirin. Everyone is Memir. We will see more about what exactly this expression means when we get into the Gemara. And who is included in Hakol Memirin? Echad Anoshim, the Echad Noshim. Whether they be male or female, men, women. Lo she'odem rashoy lahomir. We're not suggesting that a person is allowed to do Temura, because in fact it is forbidden to do Temura. The pasuk in the Torah says, lo yomir. So, what are we saying? Elo she'im hemir mumar. If someone did do this, did this action or this speech of animal sanctity replication, it takes hold. The sofeg eswar boyim, and the one who does that will be guilty of violating a negative command in the Torah and therefore be chayev, punished with 40 lashes. When we say 40 lashes, technically speaking it's 39, but it's a figure of speech when we say 40, as that's the expression that appears in the Torah. Before we go further in the Gemara, we draw our attention to the outside margin, where you see no say, a topic heading. In the Gemara that appears on your screen, the Shas Ozer, which is the cornerstone of Gemara markings, we offer topic headings and structural notes that we entitle Mivneh when necessary. In this case, our topic heading, no say, Lashon HaMishnah, we'll be focusing on the language, language of the Mishnah, HaReisha Mashma, the opening of the Mishnah sounds that D'lechatchilo Memirin, that one can at the outset, initially, as a first choice, can do Temura. Vaseifo Mashma, but as you read on in the Mishnah, it appears to also that it's actually forbidden to do Temura. So when you open up the Mishnah, it says Hakol Memirin, everyone can do Temura. Sounds like something you can do. And as you read on in the Mishnah, it says quite openly, Lo She'odom Rashoy Lahomir, not that a person is allowed to do that. So now the Gemara. Ha Gufo Kashya. The Mishnah seems to be inherently contradictory. Amris, you say on the one hand, Hakol Memirin, which sounds like it's Lechatchila, that it's a first choice type thing to do. The Hodar Tani, and then it goes on to say in the Mishnah, Loi She'odom Rashoy Lahomir, which is Dieved, that suggests something that's only good post facto. Namely, not that we're saying you should go ahead and do Temura, but all we're saying is that if one did Temura, so it takes hold. So as far as the language of the Mishnah, we have a difficulty. Now the Gemara says, even without looking at the language of the Mishnah per se, there's a more fundamental, a more basic difficulty, if it is Tisbara. Something more basic needs explanation. Hakol Memirin L'chatchila. The expression Hakol Memirin sounds like something that one is allowed to do. Well, Adekashiloch mimas nisin, until you come to ask from the Mishnah itself, or instead of asking from the continuation of the Mishnah, tikshi loch kra, you could have been, you should have been bothered by the pasuk itself. The pasuk is a more basic source of information, the Torah itself, the written Torah, dichtiv. It says in the pasuk, lo yachlifenu velo yomiroso. It's a clear commandment not to replicate the sanctity of animals. So, even without the inherent contradiction in the Mishnah, the opening of the Mishnah itself runs counter to what it says in a pasuk, a more basic source of information. Elo Omar Rav Yehuda, hachi kotani. So Rav Yehuda offers his explanation of the Mishnah. We, in our Gemara markings, we treat re-readings or suggested understandings of Tanaic sources as if they are Tanaic sources, and hence we put a frame around the next few lines representing the understanding of the Mishnah. Hakol matfisin b'tmura. Echod anoshim ve'echod noshim. The opening of the Mishnah is not a reference to the acceptability of the action, but rather it's a description of who can make it happen. And that's what hakol matpisin, who are everyone can impose a tmura on a, or a replication of a, of sanctity, whether they be men or women. V'loi she'odam rashoi l'homir. Not as if to suggest that a person is allowed to do this, Eloshim, Homir, Mumar, that all we're saying that is, if it was done, then it takes effect, the Sofeg Esar Boim, and the one who does it shall bear the penalty, the punishment of 40 lashes. The Gemara continues, Hakul Lasuye Mai. In the Mishnah, the first word of the Mishnah was Hakol Mamirin. And in order to make it easier to see where this is coming from, we also added a little arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. And you'll see that it's pointing to the very first word of the Mishnah. There's another arrow above. So when Mishnayos use the expression hakol and then enumerate things, we're interested in knowing what is the hakol, which is an inclusive word. What is it trying to include? Hakol lasuye mai. What is the word hakol coming to include? After all, the Mishnah could have said anoshim v'noshim mimirin. What do we gain by saying hakol mimirin and then start enumerating? So who is being included? The Gemara answers, Lasuye Yoresh Udalo Kribi Yehuda. The Mishnah is trying to tell us that one who inherits an heir, one who inherits a, let us say, someone's father had set aside korbanos, set aside animals, and before having a chance to bring them to the Beis HaMikdash, the man died, leaving an heir. So our Mishnah is saying that the heir can also make effect a tamura, and that's not in accordance with the opinion of Rebbe Yehuda. So we're pointing out right away that there is a Tanaic controversy whether an heir has the ability to effect a tamura on his predecessor's animal. And here we have a Tanaic source that presents these two opinions. Disanya, Yoresh Somech, Yoresh Meimir, Divrei Rebbe Meir. An heir does smicha. Smicha is the process whereby, right before an animal is slaughtered as a sacrifice, the owner places his hands on the animal's head, and with force, in other words, he presses down. That's called smicha, so that not only does the owner, the actual owner of the animal, or the one who set it aside, do smicha, but if he dies, so his heir will do smicha. And the Yoresh, the heir, can effect a tumura. That's Rebbe Meir's opinion. Rebbe Yehuda Omer, Yoresh Eino Somech, V'Yoresh Eino Meimir. A directly opposed opinion, that of Rebbe Yehuda, on both points, that a Yoresh, an heir, does not do smicha, nor does he do tumura. Before going on in the Gemara, let's get a little overview of what we're about to be doing. So on the outside margin, we notice the nosei, the topic heading, and we've already mentioned the machlokas tanoim binyan yoresh, tanaic controversy regarding an heir, e somech, e meimir. Can he do smicha, and can he effect a tmura on the predecessor's sacrifice? As we look ahead in the Gemara, we see diamonds that appear. And under our Mivneh heading, the diamond is featured. And the Mivneh is a structural note. Here we feature the role of the diamond as far as the Gemara structure is concerned. So we've written my taima, the Rebbe Yehuda. We're going to be looking, we've used the diamond around the expression my taima. What is the reason for Buta Diorish Eino Meimir? And later a diamond will appear around Rebbe Meir. What is the reason behind Rabbi Meir that says a Yoresh is Meimir? If we just take a bird's eye view of the Gemara, you'll notice that in a few lines from where we are, there is a bracketed section. And the bracketed section, it lasts till the second line from the bottom. We provide a bracket length indicator. When the bracketed section lasts a few lines, that's a vertical dash dotted line. You can see it appears to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. So our Gemara will be opening up concerning or focusing on the issue of the Yoresh and his ability to do Tmura. In this case, we'll be focusing on Rabbi Huda, who says that a Yoresh cannot do Tmura. And after the bracketed section, the Gemara will then turn to Rabbi Meir, who says a Yoresh can do Tmura. What is his reason for holding that way? In the bracketed section, the Gemara will be focusing on the issue of smicha, of the placing of the hands on the animal's head, on the part of the heir. So the bracketed section will then focus on smicha, and after the brackets, we'll go back to discuss the topic of tmura. So now, the Gemara. My taimo de Rabbi Huda. What is the reason, or the source, the basis of Rabbi Huda that says a yoresh is not meimir? Answer, Yolif Tchilas Hegdish, Misof Hegdish. These are expressions that really mean, Tchilas Hegdish means Tmura. In other words, as far as this animal is concerned, its first encounter with sanctity is the replication that's done to it. That the Chulin, the second animal, this mundane common animal, receives Kedusha through the replication effort. So that's the beginning of its sanctity. Self-Hegdish is an expression referring to smicha. So henceforth, when we see these expressions, Tchilas Hegdish, we'll associate that with Tmura, and Self-Hegdish we associate with smicha. Why is smicha called Self-Hegdish? Self means the end of its sanctity. That's because right after the smicha, the animal is slaughtered, representing the end of the animal's sacrificial status. Of course, there are a few additional stages involving the sprinkling of the blood, but it's basically the end of the animal. Hence, it's called Sof Hegdish. So, the Gemara says that Rebbe Huda learns the dinim of Tmura from the dinim of Smicha. Ma Sof Hegdish, which is just like Smicha Yoresh Eino Somech. An heir does not do smicha, and we have to prove that later, but that's a given for right now. Just like smicha is not done by an heir, atchilas hegdish, which is tmura, yoresh eino meimir. The yoresh does not do tmura. So what have we done just now? We've dealt with the reason for Buda that a yoresh does not do tmura. If we skip the bracketed section, we find ourselves two lines from the bottom. There, Rabbi Meir, to Omar Yoresh Meimir Mai Taimo. What about Shitas Rabbi Meir, who says that a Yoresh does do Tmura? And the Gemara will show you the answer at the bottom. And he says, Omar Loch Im Homer Yomir. There's a double expression, Larabos Es HaYoresh, to include the Yoresh, the heir, as someone able to do Tmura. At the upper part of the very top of Omid Beis, there will be, again, a discussion concerning smicha, but we'll point out when we get there. In the meantime, we'll go back over the Gemara now with the bracketed section included. We said, as far as Rabbi Huda and his opinion that a Yoresh is not Nemir, he learns that from the fact that a Yoresh does not do smicha. Now, the Gemara asks, Usmicha gufa menolon. From where does Rabbi Yehuda know that a Yoresh does not do smicha? Now, we also included to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara a little word, smicha, that we encircled with a vertical dashed line showing that this entire section is devoted to the issue of smicha. Later, after the brackets, we get back to the issue of tumura. So now the Gemara asks, Usmicha gufa menolon. From where does Rabbi Yehuda know that smicha itself, the Yoresh, does not do smicha? Answer, Tlas korbonoi ksivi. The word korbono appears three times in the context of a korban shlomim. Rashi gives the reference point as far as where it's found. So we have the word korbono appearing three times, and in each one of the times that the word korbono appears, Rashi explains, it's taught in conjunction with smicha. So what do we do with this information? Chad, one of them, korbono velo korban ove kechovim. One is telling us that the smicha is required on a sacrifice brought by a Jew, not by a sacrifice brought by an idol worshiper. Even though idol worshippers bring sacrifices, their sacrifices do not require smicha. Number two, v'chad korbonoi velo korban chavero. The word korbono is in the possessive, meaning his korban. His and not his friends. We're saying that a man does the smicha on his own korban, and that he doesn't fulfill smicha on someone else's sacrifice. V'chad, and the third word, is korbono velo korban aviv. And we've dashed underline this because this is really the focus point on the Torah is saying you do smicha on your korban and not on your father's korban. Namely, the heir does not do it on his predecessor's animal. Ulu Rabbi Meir, Diomar Yoresh Somech, and according to Rabbi Meir, who holds that a Yoresh does do smicha on the animal that he inherited, on the sacrifice that his predecessor left over, the heir does the smicha before the actual slaughtering of the animal. V'hoksiv korbano, but doesn't the Torah use the word korbano? And we just saw Rabbi Yehuda pointed out that that's to the exclusion of the heir. The Gemara answers, Hahu miboya lei l'rabois kol bali chivrin l'smicha. As far as Rabbi Meir is concerned, he uses the word korbano to teach that if an animal is brought jointly by several people, they partner on a sacrifice, each one of the partners is expected to do smicha. And Rashi explains that the word korbano is an address, so to speak, to each one, each and every one of the partners. The animal is considered his sacrifice, so therefore each one does smicha. Rabbi Yehuda, bali chovrin l'smicha lesle. Rabbi Yehuda's response to that is, number one, the first response is, partnered animal sacrifice does not require smicha. Rashi says, across from here, lesle, devadai enoton smicha. An animal brought in partnership certainly does not require smicha. Kima delo miachid korban didhu, since it's not a korban that is unique to a particular individual, that is reserved for one person. Klomar, kima delo hafu cholut lekol echad ve'echad, since it's not clearly reserved for any one person, there is no smicha. V'chiksiv kro, le korbano, the word korbano, as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, is v'lo le korban aviv. Continuing in the Gemara, we just said, as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, that which Rabbi Meir learned from korbano to include a jointly brought sacrifice, Rabbi Yehuda just doesn't hold that a jointly brought sacrifice requires smicha. My taimo, why is it that a partnered sacrifice doesn't require smicha? The halo miyachid korban didhu. It's not the animal is not brought specifically by one person. It's not reserved or identified with one person. The iboyesema, another response on Rebuta's part. the Olam Isle, he does hold from Kol Bali Chuvin Somchen, that the partners who bring a korban would do smicha, and that would be learned from korbono. If that be the case, so then he's using up one of the three korbono words for this purpose. So how about the other halachas? The korban oivin kechovim, the korban chavero, mechad kro nafka. The idea of an idol worshipper's sacrifice and one's friend's sacrifice not requiring smicha, or my inability to do smicha on their sacrifice, is really derived from one word. In other words, 2 points that earlier we had said that these 2 points would use up two of the korbono words. We're saying now, no, these 2 points can be derived from one word, one korbono word. And the Rashi explains, because both of them are focusing on the concept of shlichus, that one party cannot work as an agent for someone else to fulfill smicha. That, who is that someone else? Well, it could be an idol worshipper, it could be one's friend. Either way, the idea of an agent not doing smicha is derived from one korbano word. Va'aser le'chad le'balei chovrin l'smicha, thereby freeing up one of the three korbano words for requiring partners to do smicha on the korban that they are bringing jointly. So according to this second approach within Rebbe Yehuda, he has one korbano to exclude an heir. He has a second korbano to tell us that a jointly brought sacrifice requires each member to do smicha. And a third korbano to say that one does not do smicha on his friend's korban, nor on an idol worshipper's korban. V'Rabbi Meir, D'Amar Yoresh Meimir. Now, as we said before, we turn back to the topic of tamura. According to Rabbi Meir, that an heir does do tamura on a sacrifice that he inherited. My taima, what's the basis of that? Omar Loch, Rabbi Meir will answer, Im Homer Yomir. The Pasuk itself uses the word tamura in this form, in a double expression. The Homer Yomir, L'Rabois Es HaYorish. The double expression comes to include the heir as being someone who does smicha on the sacrifice that he inherited. If we skip the bracketed section, even though we haven't designed these brackets for skipping, you'll see the third line from the top, Rabbi Yehuda, after citing Homer Yomir as Rabbi Meir's source for Yoresh doing Tmura, what does Rabbi Yehuda do with that very same Pasuk? That's what you see on the third line from the top. However, on the very top of this Amud, of Amud Beis, Rabbi Meir gave us his source for the Yoresh doing the Tmura. The Yolif Soif Hegdish Mitchilas Hegdish. Rabbi Meir will learn the dinim of Soif Hegdish, meaning Smicha, from the dinim of Tmura. Ma Tchilas Hegdish Yoresh Meimir. Just like Tchilas Hegdish, which we said means Tmura, a Yoresh, an heir, does Tmura, and that we learn from the double expression in the Pasuk of Homer Yomir. Af Soif Hegdish Yoresh Somech. So too, at the end of the sanctity period, which is Smicha, the Yoresh does do Smicha. Rabbi Yehuda, Hayim Homer Yomir Mai Ovid Le. What does Rabbi Yehuda do with this Pasuk? This Pasuk which serves as Rabbi Meir's source for Yoresh. Answer, L'rabois es ho'isha. The double expression comes to include, is serve as the source, that women can effect a tmura. Uchidisanya, as is taught in the following source, L'fishekolo inyin kulo enu medaber ela loshan zohar. The topic in the Torah that deals with tmura speaks in the masculine form of speech. Shinemar lo yachlifenu v'lo yomiro so. These are verbs presented in a masculine form. I would left I would be left thinking, well, how do I know anything about a woman doing tmura? Talmud Lomar v'im homer yomir. The double expression is l'rabos eso isha, comes to include the woman, so that even though the parsha in the Torah that deals with tmura is stated in the masculine form, we know that women are included in their ability to effect a tmura, to activate a tmura. And once again, just so we don't forget, I'm not saying that it's something that one is allowed to do, but if they did it, it takes hold. Rabbi Meir, Isha min Ale, according to Rabbi Meir, who used the double expression Homer Yomir to include air as doing tmura, where does he learn woman can affect a tmura? Nafgalemi v'im. He looks at the vav in the word, in the pasuk that says v'im Homer Yomir. The vav is something that he darshins. V'Rabbi Yehuda, v'im lo darish. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, does not see any significance or drosha significance in the vav. The Gemara now asks a question. You'll notice that we have a long question marking that accompanies this section. The kuf that you see encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a vertical descending dashed line shows us how long, how many lines are used by the Gemara to develop this question. Ubein Rabbi Meir, Ubein Rabbi Huda. Taimo de Ravi Kro Leisha. You seem to be saying that the only way I know that a woman is connected to this parsha is because of the special inclusion of the woman. Holo Rav Yokro. Had there been no scriptural reference to include a woman, Havi Amina. Of the tmura lo lakya, that if she were to do tmura, she wouldn't receive lashes. In other words, that her tmura would not take effect, and hence she wouldn't receive lashes. Well, how can you really think that? How can it be that the only way we know a woman is included in tmura is through a special gzeiras hakosav? The ha'amar Rav Yehuda amar Rav, the chen tana debei Rav Yishmael. It was taught by Rav Yehuda in the name of Rav, and it also appears in a source coming from the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel. There is a pasuk that says, Isha isha ki yasu mikol chatas ha'odam. In this pasuk you see a reference to ish o isha, man or woman, who commits a violation, who commits a sin, hishva hakosav isha leish. In this pasuk, woman is compared to man. L'chol einshin sheba Torah. When it comes to any punishment in the Torah and any violation of negative commands, men and women are equal. So that from this pasuk isha o isha, I understand that a woman is included in the parsha of tmura. After all, tmura itself is a negative command. We said lo yachlifenu v'lo yomir. So from the fact that the din of tmura is a negative command, I understand that women are included in that. What do I need a special inclusion, as we saw above, either the double expression as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, or the vav in the word v'im as far as Rabbi Meir is concerned? What do I need those things for? Itzrich, I need the gzer sakosav to include women. Ma'u detemo hanimili oynish deshove bein biyochid bein betzibor. I might have thought that when is it that we say men and women are compared to one another? That's with regard to a violation that can be committed both on a private level and on a public level. Aval hocha, but in the realm of tmura, kivan de oynish, she'ena shava bakolhu, since it's a negative command that doesn't carry a penalty that is equal to all. And what do we mean by that? What do we mean that it's eino shava bakol? Disnan, ein hatzibur vashutfen oisin tmura. We know that the public or partners cannot affect a tmura. So because of this distinction between individual and public, in the case of tmura, I would have thought isha nami lo iki of the lolakya, that a woman, if she were to do tmura, she wouldn't be penalized, she wouldn't be punished, simply because it doesn't take effect. That's what I would have thought had I not had a special gzeiras hakosav. Komash malon comes along the double expression or the vav in the word ve'im to include a woman in the parsha of Tmura. So that even though Tmura is something that does not exist on a public level, nevertheless, a woman is included if she does it. Boi Romi Bar Chamo. Here we have a long question marking. You can see it appears on the to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You see a shin. It's a question. And there's a Roman numeral number 1. And as you continue down, following down the vertical dashed line, you'll see a Roman numeral number 2. And the dashed line continues even after that. Basically, these numbers that we put in diamonds correspond to that which you see in the Gemara text as well, diamonded words, katan, and then later, ove tuchavim. So on the side of our Gemara, under our nosei, mivneh heading, we feature a diamond, tmuras katan, shigila nisnedorim, a minor, namely he's under 13 years of age, but we can add already, he is above 12. That's called, he arrived at Oinas Nedarim, the time where his Nedarim can in fact become binding. That's the age of between, a Koton, it means he's a minor, but he is over the age of 12, if you're talking about a male youngster, between 12 and 13. Another point that's featured in the in this discussion is Tmuras Akum, an idol worshipper who effects a Tmura. So now the Gemara, Boi Romi Bar Chamo, Koton Mahu Shiyomir. What about a Koton trying to effect a Tmura? Well, Hechidami. Well, what are we talking about when you speak about a Koton? If you are talking about a Koton who hasn't reached this age called Oinas Nedarim, the time that his Nedarim, his vows, take effect. And that, put it simply, is he has not reached age 12 in a day. So if you're talking about a Koton like that, so the Gemara says after the parentheses section, Agdushi lo Akdish. If he hasn't reached Oinas Nedarim, so attempts that he makes to sanctify things don't take hold. Amuri Meimir, would you think that his ability to replicate Kedusha would take hold? So it's obvious that if you're talking about a Koton Shelo Higia LaOinas Nedarim, he hasn't reached the age in which his vows would have significance, namely he's under 12 years of age, it's obvious to us that he would not be able to effect a Tmura. Ela ki kome bayale, what is Rami Bar Chama asking about? Bekotan shigia la'inas nedarim. It's about a minor who is above 12 years and a day of age. That means he's arrived at Oinas Nedarim. He's at the time that a neder, a vow that he would take hold. So, assuming that that's what we're talking about. Now, the analysis of the question. Mi amrinon kevon diomar mor ish. Matamu lomar ki afli neder. This in this pasuk, it uses the expression an ish. Says, and then it says when he utters a vow. L'rabois muflo hasomoch liish. The presence of the word ish in this pasuk is actually superfluous. The pasuk could have simply said ki yafli neder, when one takes a vow. What do I gain by having the word ish included as well? So through this, we end up including someone who is though he's a minor, he's within a year. He's within a year of gadlus. He's between 12 and 13, and we call this the mufla hasomach liish. And reading that in the Gemara. Do we say that the term in the pasuk ish comes to include a mufla samach ish, the kachoy kadosh, things that he would set aside as to sanctify as korbanos, they would take effect. Mida akdushi maktish amuri nami meimir, from the fact that the mufla hasamach ish, that his initial sanctification of things takes hold, he would also have the ability to effect a tmura. Oy Dilma, Kevan Dalav Bar Oshinu, since he is a minor and as such does not incur court punishment. He's called, he's a lav bar onshin, betmura lo mitpis, since he can't even receive punishment, so his the tmura that he would make, this replication of sanctity, would not take effect. So those are the two possibilities, two sides of the question. Now, im tinsalomar koton ovid tmura da osi lichlal onshin, and if you try to argue that even though right now he's not a bar onshin, he's not eligible to receive a punishment, but you might still argue that he the katan is someone that will come to receiving punishments when he reaches, when he passes bar mitzvah age, when he passes into adulthood. Still, I have a question, says Rami Bar Chama, Oyved Koychavim Mahu Shiomir. What about a Gentile or an idol worshipper and his ability to effect a tmura? This also has an analysis with two parts to it. We call this the Aleph Odilmo Bay structure. The Aleph is here, and two lines later, you'll see Odilmo squiggle underlined with a Bay's. So we read as follows. Regarding the idol worshipper, can he do a tamura? Mi amris mi de akdushi makdish. We skip the two lines in brackets. Amuri nami meimir. Notice how this the use of the brackets preserves a smooth reading of the Gemara. Namely, do we say from the fact that a Gentile, an idol worshipper, can create initial sanctity, and that how do we know that? That's explained in the bracketed section. So since he can make an animal sanctified, an initial sanctity, so amuri nami meimir, he could also effect a korban sanctity replication. Oy dilma, or possibly kevon delo osi lichlal onshin, he of a tmura lo kotcha, an idol worshipper as opposed to a minor, he never comes to the realm of onshin, of receiving court punishments for these violations. He's not even commanded regarding these things. So if he, since he doesn't come to being someone capable of receiving these punishments, ki ovit tmura lo kotcha, when he attempts to effect a tmura, it would not take effect. Now let's read this Gemara again, because we skipped two lines. This is, we call this question number two of Rami Bar Chama, is oive kichovim mahu shiyomir. What about an idol worshipper's power to create tmura? Mi amris mida akdushe makdish, from the fact that he can make an initial animal sanctified, desanya, the Brisa says, ish ish, quoting from the Pasuk, ma tamalomar ish ish. What is the necessity of the Pasuk to use that expression? La rabois, it comes to include esa oive kechavim shenoyrim nedarim unedavos kisrael. The double expression ish ish comes to include all men, even idol worshippers, that they can vow animals to be brought as sacrifices. So since they have the power, idol worshippers have the power of sanctifying something initially, amuri nami meimir. So maybe it would follow that they can also replicate kedushas. Oidoma, or possibly kevantolo osi lichlal onshim, since a Gentile, as opposed to a minor, which was the first issue that Rami Bar Chama had raised, the Gentile never comes to a situation where he is chayev in onshim. He's not commanded in these things. So therefore, if he does them, he's not going to get punishment. He's not going to get any punishment. Therefore, since he's not bar onshim legabi tumura, ki ovid tumura lo kotcha, if he were to try to effect a tumura, it wouldn't take hold. So that is basically the end of the long question that Rami Bar Chama started. What's the story with regard to a cotton and with regard to an ovi kuchavim vis-a-vis their ability to do tumura? Omar Rava, Toshma, Rava answers, and he brings an answer that's focused on the issue of the idol worshiper. There's another point we didn't mention as far as the markings are concerned. After the diamond around Ovei Kohavim, a triangle was introduced around Mahu Shiomir. So that represents, the triangle with the point facing up represents questions. When the triangle's flipped over, as we see right now, this represents a response, a tshuva. So Rava answers, Omar Rava Toshma. Let us hear from a Tanaic source regarding idol worshippers. It says, Desanya, Kotche Kotchim. Kotche Ovdei Kohavim, Lo Nehenin Velo Moyalin. A Gentile or an idol worshipper that set aside an animal as a sacrifice, it's also to Nenef, to derive benefit from it, but Velo Moalin, there's no Me'ila violation. And let's say that again, Lo Nenin, one is not to benefit from it. However, if one does benefit from it, Velo Moalin, they're not considered in violation of the Me'ila prohibition. V'ein Chayovin Alehem Mishum Pigol Noiser V'tomei. Other details concerning animals sanctified by an idol worshipper, there is no violation of pigol, nosar, or tame. Other details, ein oisin tamura, they do not create tamura, and that's exactly the topic that we're interested in. An Ovei Kohavim, can he do tamura? Here it says, no, he can't. The ein mevi'in nesachim, they don't bring a private wine offering or a separate wine offering. Avol korbono ta'un nesachim, divrei Rabbi Shimon. However, an idol worshipper's sacrifice necessitates an accompanying wine offering. Omer Rabbi Yossi, bekulon aniroya lahachmir. Regarding all of these points that the Tanakhama was lenient with vis-a-vis the idol worshipper's sacrifice, Rabbi Yossi is strict. There's a Rashi that one may find beneficial around the eighth wide line under the Gemara. It's underlined as the Dibur Maskil reads, Bekulani Roani Lahachmir. The lo nenin, the lo molin, the chayovim alei mishum pigul nosar v'tomei, kishar kochim. That one who does pigul or leaves it over and to become nosar or allows tuma to be present, the idol worshipper sacrifices are all bound to those things. Continuing back in the Gemara. After having read Rabbi Yossi, who said, regarding all of the halachas mentioned earlier, I feel that we should be strict with regard to the idol worshipper's sacrifice and not offer some type of leniency. Bamed Vamurim, now this Bamed Vamurim is a flashback to the Tanakhama. The Tanakhama mentioned that the idol worshipper's sacrifice, if one were to benefit from it, he would not be over Mi'ila. So now we say Bamed Vomurim, when is it that there's no Mi'ila? Bekotche Mizbeach, things that he set aside, that the idol worshipper set aside to be brought on the altar. Avo Bekotche Berek Abayas Moyolin Bohen. However, things that were designated to be for the temple repair fund, if one benefits from it, even though it was designated or dedicated by an idol worshipper, it does engender the Me'ila prohibition. Kotoni miha ein oisin tamura. Amongst other things, it said in this source that the kotshim of goyim ein oisin tamura. So would that not answer our question regarding do idol worshippers have the ability of making tamura? So it would seem from here that no. So if that be the case, so why was Rami Bar Chama even asking his question? So the Gemara now responds. The last was an attempt to provide an answer, and now this is a response to that, so we're calling this a reinstating a question. That's why the triangle has the point facing up. Rami Bar Chamo, the Hegdish Oved Kechovim, his Kaper Oved Kechovim, we used a singular quotation marks to help in the reading, to read this as a phrase. Something sanctified, an animal set aside and sanctified by an idol worshiper for the benefit, for his own benefit. That's l'skaper ovikhova, means for his own atonement. Lo ko mibayali. That is really not something I am questioning or I'm asking about. To me, it's obvious that in that case, there is not going to be any mi'ila violation for one who benefits from it. Ki ko mibayali, my question comes up. The Hikdish Oved Kechavim Umeskaper Yisrael, where there is a Jew that needed a sacrifice to be brought. He needed to bring one. And he has there's a Gentile, an idol worshiper, that actually set aside for the Jew's benefit. He set aside a korban, that's Hikdish Oved Kechavim, and the beneficiary of it, the Meskaper, is the Yisrael. Now, the question is, an animal like that, can Tmura be done? So the animal itself is set aside as a sacrifice. Is Tmura relevant to this? Now, here we have, again, two sides to the question. Boser Makdish Azlinon, or Boser Miskapir Azlinon? Do we look at the Makdish? The Makdish was a Gentile, was an idol worshiper. So, as such, he does not... He would not do tmura. Or do we look at obosar miskaper aslinon? Do we look at the beneficiary, the Jew who is the beneficiary, giving it the an identity as a Jewish korban, and hence it would be subject to tmura? That is what Rami Bar Chama is raising as a question. So the Gemara says, Tif Shotle Mida Rabbi Avo. Why can't Rami Bar Chama resolve his question regarding the animal set aside by the Gentile on behalf of a Jew from Rabbi Avo's teaching? The Amar Rabbi Avo, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Hamakdish, Moisiv Chaimish. One point he makes out of several is that he who comes to redeem something from Hegdish, if the one who initially sanctified it comes to redeem, so he adds a fifth, as opposed to an outsider coming to redeem. That's Makdish, is Moisef Chaimish, and Miskaper Oisef Tmura. The beneficiary is the one that has the power to do Tmura, and in our case, we have to emphasize the beneficiary, in fact, was a Jew, so that this animal... this animal could have tmura done to it. The miskaper, the beneficiary, the Jew who is the beneficiary, he could actually make tmura. Vehatorei mishalo al shel chavero, someone who uses his own produce to serve as a truma tithe for his friend's produce. So we have someone holding on to a truma, which has to be given to a kohen. Let us say the question right now is the tovas hanah. There's a certain favor value that this truma has. We'll explain what we mean by favor value, but who is the beneficiary of this tovas hanah? So once again, the third case is someone is we can use examples of Mr. A is using his own produce to serve as a tithe for Mr. B's untithed produce. If someone were, let us to say, come and offer money to the person doing the tithing on his friend's produce and saying, listen, I have a grandson who is a Kohen. I'll pay you money for you to give this truma to my grandson. That is the tovas hanah value, the favor value that is in this truma. Person who is setting aside truma can't himself eat from it. It's a tithe given to a kohen. Here, in directing it to a specific kohen in exchange for payment, who gets that payment? Is it the one whose produce is being used to serve as the tithe, or is it the one whose produce is being tithed, is receiving the benefit of this tithing? So who is in control, so to speak, of who gets this truma? That was the third point of Rabbi Avol, that Tore Mishalo al Shel Chaver Tovas Hanah Shelo. The Tovas Hanah, favor value that we described, belongs to the one who is using his fruits to tithe his friend's produce. So what is the point we're holding with right now? Rami Bar Chama had asked a question concerning the idol worshiper and the ability to do tmura. Wouldn't Rami Bar Chama's question be able to be answered from over here, from Rabbi Avol, that says the miskaper osef tmura, so that when a Gentile had set aside an animal for the benefit of a Jew, since the miskaper, the one who's receiving the atonement, happens to be a Jew, so osef tmura, can be done. That means the tmura that's done can take effect. So the question right now is, why didn't Rami Bar Chama, who raised the question, why didn't he answer the question from Rabbi Avol? Omar Lay. So here is a long response, and with which we will then understand why Rami Bar Chama is asking his question. Hasam hu deka'asi mikayach Yisrael, with regard to Rabbi Avol's halacha, who spoke about the miskaper, it's talking about a case where a fellow Jew had set aside the animal as a sacrifice. That's where the initial sanctity was through a Yisrael. That's dekasi mikoyach Yisrael. Mishum hachi azlinen bosem miskaper. Therefore, we say, let's look at who the beneficiary is, and he will be the one who can do the tmura. Vahavilei tchiloso v'sofo biyad Yisrael. That is a case where the beginning and the end was under Jewish auspices. Avol hacha, in the case that Rami Bar Chama is addressing, where the idol worshipper is the one that imposed the initial sanctity, hachi ka mibayale. Here, the question is as follows. Mi bo'inon mitchilo v'yatsof deteku b'rishus mando v'tmura oiloi. Is it necessary for the animal to be from the beginning till the end under the control or in the domain of someone who can make tmura, or not? Teku. So the question of if does this requirement apply before we can speak about tmura, does it apply or not, this remains unresolved. So Rami Bar Chama's question remains unresolved, and with that we conclude our shiur for today.